Welcome in, Scuttlebucks. Jeff Cameron alongside Tom Lang. Great to be with you. A little bye week. The Bucks are in desperate need of it, so that's a good thing. As always, we are brought to you by our friends at Bill Curry Ford. Go see my man Sean Sullivan. He's the GM there. You can find his email, in fact, on the website, BillCurryFord.com, and go find him, and he'll talk with you about the Bucks. You can say, hey, listen, so I'm going to buy this truck because why wouldn't I? It's a gorgeous truck, and I've been looking for a new truck, but I would like the Joe Bucks fan discount. And Sean will say, oh, well, by all means. Now, which color would you like? So Bill Curry Ford is where you want to go. Head over there. It's right by the stadium, within a mile, I think it is. And or if you could check out the selections, kind of figure out what you want to do before you get there, BillCurryFord.com. We appreciate fine folks at Bill Curry Ford, as always. Well, okay, so the Bucks, you know, we've talked, Tom, lose to the Saints, and
yep,
it's kind of a, all right, well, you know, not great, but a million penalties and all that stuff that we documented on the last Scuttlebucks and turnovers and all that. But now you get into an interesting situation, at least as it pertains to today's Scuttlebucks. At the time that we're recording this, in the interest of transparency, of course, there is this talk that perhaps, much like Alabama is the wayward home for coaches that are fired or let go for whatever reason, they find a way to be an analyst on Nick Saban's staff. Apparently receivers, malcontents, people who have issues on and off the field but can still play, want to land in Tampa Bay. And it's worked out for the Bucks, obviously, with Antonio Brown. Now the discussion is centers around Odell Beckham Jr., which I would not want. Primarily because the difference between Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham Jr. is that Antonio Brown had off-the-field issues, no doubt, and alarming ones at that that caused us all to raise an eyebrow. But there was never a question of his athletic prowess, willingness to prepare, and overall ability as a receiver. In my mind, just giving my opinion here, Odell Beckham Jr. hasn't been any good in a long time. Why would you want to put up with a headache and you don't have the production to back it up?
Yeah, the argument you'd make for Odell Beckham Jr. is the argument that Steve Smith made on Thursday Night Football, which is that Baker's not good. And so, therefore, how good can you be if your quarterback is not very good? But I don't buy that so much. Most things that Steve Smith says from an analyst standpoint, I take with a lot of grains of salt.
As you should, Tom.
As I should. As much as I loved him as a football player, I actually liked him as his career went along. I hated his ass with Jake Delhomme in the early part of their careers in the NFC South, but you go to respect a guy if he keeps on taking hits at 5'8" over and over and over.
Oh, he's tough and he's good and he was competitive and he cared and he prepared. Yeah, as a player, I respected the hell out of him, but as an analyst, I don't respect him at all.
So that's more than I could say about Odell Beckham Jr., right? About the consistency and the toughness that he brings to the table. He's no Steve Smith in that regard. So when you have a roster that's this full and Antonio Brown's not out for the season, people, he's coming back soon. So, you know, if he's your guy that Tom Brady likes to throw to over the middle or in traffic or in third and obvious situations, not named Rob Gronkowski, and you're getting Scotty Miller back, and I thought Tyler Johnson played pretty well on the road against the Saints. I mean, where are you fitting this guy into the rotation after the bye week? I get building depth, but if the Bucks have, and we were talking off the air, if you've got a few million, thanks to restructures, a few million dollars in salary cap between now and the end of the season, I'd like to save those pennies for the defense. Offense really ain't the problem right now. Antonio Brown did make a difference, but he stuck around after the Super Bowl. So I want flexibility to spend money on defense. Secondary, can always use an extra edge rusher. Maybe linebacker help. Whatever it is, I'd rather spend my dollars there between now and the end of the season than on a guy like Odell Beckham Jr. and run the risk of his dad popping off on Twitter or LeBron James weighing in or something along those lines. Like, man, this is distraction central. You don't need that right now. In fact, it sounds like, from what Bruce is saying, this team needs fewer distractions, not more distractions as they get into November and December.
You mentioned the cap. It's $3,217,928 of cap space, effective cap space as well. That's what you have. And so they're near the bottom of teams with money. The Bucks only have more money to spend than the Giants, Colts, Lions, Ravens, Cards, Dolphins, Falcons, Saints. Saints are dead ass last. They cannot really spend any more money. So that's what you have there. But again, I just don't see the value in this. You could retort to me and say, well, if Odell Beckham Jr. is your fourth receiver, which is, by the way, what he would be, a fourth receiver in Tampa Bay, that's a unreal. It is unreal. As a fourth receiver, sure, there's some value. Now you have to juxtapose that with all of the other stuff that comes with Odell Beckham Jr. I never discount the ability of Tom Brady to get people to fly right, to get people to do the right thing. All those years in New England when Bill Belichick and his brood felt comfortable bringing in any number of guys that had checkered pasts and problems off the field. Most of the time, most, not all, it saw those guys come in and fly right and play hard and get the most out of what remaining ability they had. So I suppose you would take that risk if you thought Tom Brady could ensure that we didn't have nonsense from Odell Beckham Jr. But again, I'm with you. I think I would save what little money the Bucs have at this point for perhaps more important problems to solve. Receiver is not a problem in Tampa Bay when you're healthy. Receiver is a huge plus right now. So I just think, again, it's maybe a non-starter. It's probably a Friday conversation. It's probably, hey, Odell's people throw it out there. Odell, I don't doubt, desires the opportunity to play with Tom Brady, because if you're a receiver, why wouldn't you? Especially if you thought you could go get a ring, and the Bucs will be one of the few handful of teams that are vying for a ring this year. So, you know, it's going to be put out there, but I don't think it makes a lot of sense for Tampa Bay, and I wouldn't want to do it.
Yeah, again, yeah, if you're in his camp, of course you would. 100% you would. I'll play for the league minimum. It's a one-year deal. Prorate that bad boy down. Your cap hits nothing. I'll be quiet. I'll fly right. And you know what? If we go play in a Super Bowl and I've got three catches for 42 yards and a touchdown, but one of those routes looks fresh, I'm going to get another opportunity somewhere else. But again, just looking at his numbers, listen, he hasn't been available the last 2 years. He's played 13 total games the last two seasons. The last time he played a full slate of games was 2019. He had 1,000 yards. 1,000 yards. That's it on 133 targets. You know, that's where, again, to me, it's like, I think we live in this. We talked about this as well before, and this will be the last of it. We can move to something else. But we live in this world where that Sunday night football catch happened yesterday. Man, that happened like in 2015.
A long time ago, man. He hasn't been a relevant player for on-the-field contributions in a very long time. Now, I will say, and again, it's not as if Odell Beckham Jr. doesn't provide something for a team if he's healthy, if, capital I, capital F. But the system he did play in Cleveland is a run-first system built off of play action. You're not going to put up dramatically good numbers at wide receiver there, which is fine, which is fine. I mean, that's all the more reason it's absurd if you're his camp to rip Baker Mayfield. I mean, look, it's not the offense that you're going to see a guy go out and sling it around for a ton of yardage, because your best players are your two running backs, and you have the opportunity with a strong offensive line to run the ball first. It'd be like getting mad at Tennessee for not throwing the ball more to their receivers. Well, Derrick Henry's kind of a game changer. You know, what are you going to do? So anyhow, I roll my eyes at the idea, but that's the report as you and I sat down to record the Scuttlebutt this morning. And I didn't think it was wise for us to ignore it, but what we should do is turn our attention, I guess now, Tom, to what the Bucs are or are not and what they have to be. And what they haven't been, more importantly, is healthy. They haven't been healthy since the first game of the season. And I'm holding out hope in the second half of the season, which is what is in essence we're looking at now during this bye week moving into the second half of the season, is that you get guys back and not just available to play, but at 100%, that they're feeling good, that they can go out and be the best version of themselves. I mean, we know that with this offense, if you have a healthy offensive line and you've got a healthy Gronk and a healthy Antonio Brown, and a healthy Mike Evans, and a healthy Chris Godwin, we can go on and on for days. And an emerging and more healthy O.J. Howard, and you get Scotty Miller back. I mean, all of a sudden, you go back to being that offense that I would say good luck stopping everybody. I mean, there's just too many weapons. But they haven't been healthy, and they haven't been healthy on the back end of their defense at all. I mean, this is a race to health before the end of the season. And we said that before the year began, because you have an older team, a veteran-laden team, guys who've been through the wars, who have gonna be, you know, they're going to be beat up. They're a little bit older. It's going to take a little bit of time to get healthy. That's not true of the secondary, although in the case of Sherman, that's certainly true. But, I mean, it's, you know, get right and try to amass a record that allows you to have an option of perhaps getting a bye. I don't know if it's possible now, but you do raise an eyebrow now that you see what's happening in Green Bay. as their leader, decided not to be a leader and make the mistake that he did. I say to make the decision that he did. Be interesting to see what happens to the Packers, by the way. I'm sure there are fines and draft picks coming. But then, you know, Arizona suffered a loss just in the nick of time to that Green Bay team before that problem happened. So between them and the Rams and where you're at, this is a race to the finish line for that home field and for that bye and obviously to get healthy.
Yeah, there's a lot to chew on there, and then that's what makes it fun is, you know, even though there's 17 games and we've only played eight, this is still the de facto midway point. To me, I'm more excited to see that secondary when it's fully healthy, and that Bruce Arians earlier in the week alluded to the fact that they're hoping they could get two guys off of IR as soon as next week against Washington. That really buoys me. That Sean Murphy Bunting could be back.
That's crazy, like, yeah.
Back before Thanksgiving. That's huge because we have not seen this defensive backfield with all of the players on the field at the same time. And I mean the starters, the guys that we were counting on and you put on your two deep right at the top of the list. You didn't have Jordan Whitehead to start the season. Antoine Winfield and Jordan Whitehead together, that looks great. Like we remembered it. The guys get downhill, they make plays. But then outside, when you have Carlton Davis back and Murphy Bunting, and then Richard Sherman's your fourth or fifth option at defensive back, buddy, you're in business at that point, but you want to be able to see that.
Sure.
So me more than, because I was impressed, even with all the bumps and bruises on offense as we were heading into the bye, I'm still impressed with its output. I mean, it's doing fine. When they get all the weapons back, you get closer to that unstoppable place, which gets fun. But I thought it handled the mess that was the injury bug pretty well, even with Gronk out, Antonio Brown out, among others here and there. But if you want to go, I guess you're looking at this schedule, nine games left, one loss, you probably have room for one if you're trying to comfortably make it into the top overall seed in the NFC and get the bye week. You need to get your defensive backfield in order. Because I like what I've seen out of the D-line. JPP doesn't need to practice much anymore in my book. Dude's fine. He's affecting games. If he doesn't have to, you know, participate Monday through Friday, very limited, that's okay. He can handle that. I like a lot of the elements of this group, but the one thing I will say immediately following the bye, all these players coming back or not, we'll see how the roster shuffles over the next week. Those games against Washington, the Giants, and the Colts look a little bit more difficult than they did about 2 weeks ago when we've been constantly breaking down the remainder of the schedule. The Colts offense is live. That's in 3 weeks. That game's going to be in their building, so you have to show up and play that game. Sooner than that, you know, coming out of the bye week, if not on your P's and Q's and not pass protecting, well, Washington's pass rush still grades out well. They don't cover anybody, but their pass rush is graded well all season long. And then the game in between, we always play the Giants close or lose to them. It's just inevitable. We actually, I feel like they're a division opponent now as it is, man. We play them every freaking year. The Giants are on the schedule. Yeah. And that's a Monday night game. At least it's in Tampa. But you know that game's going to be close to the second half for no damn good reason.
Bucks are undefeated at home this year and have played very well there. I think if we're looking ahead at what you have to do to give yourself a chance to garner the things that we want, such as a bye or home field, is you can't do any worse than what did we say? Nine games remain, Tom? Seven and two, I think, has got to be the record at worst. So that would put you at 13-4. 13-4 it gives you a chance, especially because you do have a head-to-head win against Dallas. It's also in that mix of teams. So, you know, let's see what happens there. It'd be nice, by the way, that in that 7-2 or 8-1, if I could be so bold, that you go ahead and beat the Saints at some point in a regular season game. That'd be cool. Yeah. So throw that. I'm getting about damn tired of that.
Yeah, so there's a revenge game, obviously, for, you know, regular season reasons. We all know it's been well documented the last three games, all three games in the Brady era. But that's Sunday Night Football on December 19th, and that's following the Buffalo Bills matchup. Mm. So now that looks like what am I talking about? That doesn't even look like that difficult of a sequence. It's going to be Taysom Hill? Like, who are they going to sign? Philip Rivers off the street? I know his agents put out there that they would listen if Sean Payton and the Saints called. But they don't have any money either. They're going to have to make some corresponding moves in order to make something like that happen, even if it is for a 95-year-old Philip Rivers. So that game, like we talked about earlier, they won the battle, but they lost the war there. What are they going to have for us? Now, you do need to show up and make it happen and not let Sean Payton dial up some nonsense for 60 minutes and you're looking at, you know, 24-21 down with the football with 3 minutes to go. But what's getting interesting, I guess, is that Bucks football is not a de facto number one overall seed in the NFC after this loss. I'd rather it be, but now your margin for error is slimmer. Like I said, I think 8-1 gets you to where you want to go. You're right, 7-2 could, but then you're watching playoff scenarios and other games in the 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock slate all throughout December and early January. So, you know, there's more interesting things on the table. For me, it's get all your guys healthy, and then let's see if we can stay healthy in the back end of the season. It's also going to be interesting to me, buddy, that, you know, if you're playing 9 straight games, it's a veteran-laden group. How are they going to manage the players? Will they give players a rest on, say, I don't know, week 17 against the Jets, if there are still things to play for? Or I'm looking at maybe the Falcons in week 13. Like, are you going to have to manage your players in a way that's almost like a 22 games and 24-day stretch for a Major League Baseball schedule? That's something that all coaches are going to have to figure out this year.
Well, one thing you could do is you could play Joe Tryon a lot more. I mean, every week that we look at this and we talk about the previous game, I go back and I look at snaps played. I look at the participation chart, if you will.
Yeah.
And they don't even play that guy. What the hell are they doing? It's strange to me. It's just odd. I don't know what they don't like about him, because everything I see about him, I love.
Well, we drop him in coverage way too often.
Well, that's silly. Yes.
It's around 5 snaps a game on average for the season. And that's way too many. I think the thing that they're trying to coach out of him, which is, this is an old phrase that we know from up here in Tallahassee. You'd rather say whoa than giddy up. The dude has no contain in him, man. There is no contain. There is little setting the edge. Like, he just wants to pin his ears back and go. And maybe that's what they tell him to do as a backup. They're like, listen, man, you're going to get a few snaps, go balls to the wall, 115, 120%.
Well, I mean, situationally, Tom, if you're only, let's say that's all you want out of him. I mean, he only played 8 snaps against the Saints.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what we're doing here. I mean, let's go. Let's play some football. He's a good player. But you also have a 32-year-old Jason Pierre-Paul who could use the rest. So, I mean, it coincides. I just don't know why you wouldn't do that. I think they probably will, though, Tom. I think there's a couple things here to look at on defense, and that is that, you know, they got to find a way to get more pressure. They're not sacking the quarterback the way they did a year ago. They were a menace to opposing offenses a year ago, and they're not that this year, at least in terms of wreaking havoc in the backfield and getting after the quarterback.
Yeah, I think part of that is also, if you don't have guys that you feel good about covering, you know, in one-on-ones or coming up and pressing, then quarterbacks have easier reads of the line of scrimmage and they get rid of the ball sooner. Like, so you help them in that regard. If you get healthy defensive back and you have Bunting and Carlton Davis, you might be able to line up a couple yards closer to the line of scrimmage. And then somebody like a Ross Cockrell or Richard Sherman's in the middle. I'm sure, you know, we've had, like I said, every week, you know, we have like 12 defensive backs that have been in the rotation. So I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody obvious that would be defending over the middle, but whoever it is, if you're able to press up on them, the reads become a little bit more difficult. The blitz is more effective. And I think at that point, if the quarterback's got to hold it for an extra tick, that's how you get home. But, it's not without precedent that Tryon's played more this season. When JPP was out earlier this year, he played more than 50 snaps, both on the road at LA and New England, back-to-back weeks. So I totally agree with you. I think he's going to see more run. But to quote Lee DeKemper's stat for the second time this week, when he mentioned on the Ira Kaufman podcast, 22 blitzes last week, 0 quarterback pressures. That is a record for the NFL next-gen stats era. You want to know why Trevor Siemian looked halfway decent? 22 blitzes and no pressures. It's still an NFL quarterback. If you're committing 5 and 6 dudes and they can't get home, well, then the advantages down the field and coverage are very good for a quarterback, especially when you don't have your best defensive backs on the field.
They don't get home right now. And I've been particularly critical of a certain linebacker that I absolutely adore, but I'm going to need him to break down when he gets in there and not be hair on fire. Oh, I just ran past you again. Cause he's done it a million times this year and it's tiresome.
Yeah. You know, that's a good point to it. And maybe that's something that's going on here. The subtext of complimentary football. When you believe your offense is going to score 35 to 40 points, as long as they don't turn the ball over every single week, maybe you freelance a little bit more and try to make splash plays. You know,
well, the Bucs have picked off a ton of passes, so that makes a lot of sense. They have perhaps freelanced more. I mean, if you look at the interception numbers as it compares to the best in the league, the Bucs are right there. Right. So, and we would have never guessed that with that secondary. So I do think you have guys taking chances.
Yeah, I think that's also part and parcel with the blitzes, but I agree with you. I think that's part of the problem of coming back after winning a championship is like, what more do I have to do? Maybe the answer is not so much. You know, you just keep doing what you do, and that's boring. But I mean, you think about the way this defense played down the stretch and then throughout the entirety of the playoffs last season, they were counted upon a lot. That road game in New Orleans, a lot. On the road in Lambeau, that whole second half, that's all on the defense. And you could argue that even though we blow out the Chiefs to score 30 points, the defense had more to do with that than the offense did in the Super Bowl. So maybe it's, you know, they see that this offense is fine-tuned and it's a real souped-up sports car this year versus last year where it was just kind of getting by and they figured out ways to score points. And maybe they're thinking, well, now it's our time to eat. We can just go have fun. The message for the second half should be, whatever fundamentals you had and principles that you were abiding by in January and February last year, just stick to those. Because guess what? We can win games 28-10. We're allowed to do that.
Yeah, well, we have to do that on the road because we're not scoring nearly as many points at on the road as we do at home. And that's somewhat normal, but it's significantly less. What are we averaging at home? Over 40? And then it's on the road, it's under 25 or 26. So, you know, we're seeing that. Now, again, you had a road game against the Rams, and that's kind of tough sledding. But I would say this, too. I understand, and maybe that's why I was so calm after the Saints game. I was a little frustrated by the penalties, and some of them weren't, I agree with you, but they still were in excess of – it would have been, even if you remove a couple of shaky penalties, it would have been in the neighborhood of nine, which is not great. And the Bucs commit a lot of them. They also don't, you know, there's a couple of things they're not doing well, which speaks to a lack of focus. You know, I was looking, every time we come on, you and I both are going to read through the numbers. We're going to look at the advanced metrics. We're going to look at all the stats just to kind of have a feel for what this team is or is not beyond certainly the eye test. And I was aghast when I was reading a number of missed tackles. And we've seen a ton of that too. And that directly correlates, obviously, if you look at the overall numbers of yards after catch, which the Bucs are really bad at, and giving up. So I think what you're pointing to is something that reeks of lack of focus. It's certainly not lack of ability. So that's what happens after you win a Super Bowl in the first half of a season, right? I mean, unless you're just some sort of special hell-bent to be the greatest of all time, and Brady did that at New England, but it's hard to replicate that with veteran players, especially in a season that's even longer than it was a year before.
Well, and I think also, you know, if you look at how Brady's relationship with Bruce has gone too, he's asked Bruce for days off and Bruce is like, sure. So I think this Tom Brady's a little bit different. Now I'm going to qualify that at the end of this little story. But again, with Bill Belichick, there were no days off, period. And Brady comes down to Tampa. He's like, listen, my body could use a day. And Brady's like, sure. Or Bruce is like, sure. So it's a completely different culture where if you need a break, take a break. If your kids are playing a high school game or your kid's got a play that you want to go see, coach says when he took the job, he said to my assistants, if you don't go, I'm firing you. You go spend time with your family. You go have the balance in your life. I think that's what comes with this is now Bruce is trying to turn the other way and, you know, tighten the screws a little bit and say, hey, guys, listen, you know, that's all fine and good. And we are reigning Super Bowl champions and a lot of y'all got paid. Most of y'all got paid to come back here, but let's tighten it up. For my money, though, I think it's all about playing right at the right time of the year. I know these are cliches, but guess what? We haven't lived on this side of the cliche in Tampa like ever.
It's fun.
Where you've been a prohibitive favorite with both sides of the ball being able to play well. Like when we won last time, it was, can the offense do enough back in the late 90s and early 2000s? Now it's both of them could be upper echelon / elite if they play at the pinnacle, if they play at the top of what their capabilities are. So I think Brady might be saving that for the, like, if he got mad now, I mean, how much weight would that carry if he gets mad again in 3 weeks and three weeks after that? I feel like you're going to see the hell on fire focus come post Thanksgiving. And if you could just navigate this part of the schedule 3-0, 4-0, then December is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I do. We said at the first scuttlebucks that we did for this year that I was not going to get alarmed by the occasional game that, you know, the Bucs don't show up in. I kind of suspected it would happen. It's going to happen to a lot of teams. It already has happened. I mean, explain Cincinnati's loss to the Jets or whatever. You know, I mean, these things, they happen every year. So you're going to have a couple of those. When you're the reigning Super Bowl champion, you go, oh, well, If you're those other franchises that are on the rise or trying to win one, that infuriates you because then that scares you. It knows, you know, it's in there and you don't know that a championship is in there, but we do. We yep. know there's a championship in there. We know we have the best quarterback to ever play the game. We know that when the Bucs are healthy and focused, they're capable of raising their level of play to go, I don't know, undefeated in the postseason on the road. I mean, that's who they are. And they brought every one of those guys back, and they haven't been healthy. So, yep. you know, it's kind of hard to get angry. Listen, I'm going to enjoy the games, and I'm going to look for trends. And I have been critical so far of Devin White, who I love because I hold him to a high standard, and he hasn't played to that standard this year. He's been much worse in coverage. He's kind of, you know what, he's reverted back to the linebacker that was poor in coverage for the first half of last year and then got called out on it and then began to play really well and certainly played well in the postseason. And so you saw, oh, you're capable of more, I see. So listen, we got to get back to that. True. But I'm not going to flip out. I they're good. And if they have to go on the road, they have to go on the road. Now I must admit it would be less than ideal if in the playoffs, they have to go on the road to face the Rams. Let's try to avoid that scenario, especially because the Bucs have been so good at home. So good at home. Dominant. Well,
and you don't want to go play Aaron Rodgers on the road either, man. I mean, if you got, you know, Aaron.
I've been there, done that time. We'll take care of Aaron Rodgers. You
know, it'll be a little different. It'll be a little different this time with that stand, you know, the stands full. Maybe a couple of those calls don't go your way. Maybe they see a jersey, you know, that's torn off the body of Tyler Johnson. They're like, yeah. 2,000 people here. We'll let that go. Yeah, I mean, overall, if you're looking for weaknesses here, you don't have very many. I think right guard's been bad. Kappa hasn't been very good this year. Coverage at linebacker leaves something to be desired. We don't tackle all that well, but
We don't tackle well at all.
You get your players back, and maybe you tackle a little bit better, especially you know with your better guys in the secondary. But you know, that's something that those are long-term things that you can assess over the next month. It's just, you're right when you point out that the offense is a little bit more stagnant on the road. There was a 2-week sequence there, you know, week 3 and week 4, we all know it. We got to 24 against the Rams, didn't feel like it, didn't feel that productive.
No.
The Patriots, we were ass in the red zone, got to 19 points, and somehow that was a game because we didn't convert in the red zone. The Eagles, we ran it up and then got, you know, tired and bored with that game and nearly, you know, pissed it away. But it was 28. And then the Saints game, you have the lead late, but that was way too sloggy and sloppy for the bulk of the action that particular Sunday. So you go on the road. It might be soupy and weird. You know how the weather can get in the DMV area. So if you're playing the football team up in Washington, that could be a muddy track. You never know. And then your next two roadies after that are Indy in the Dome. Offense looks pretty good. And then the Falcons, who can rise up in a given week, especially if Calvin Ridley's back, but it doesn't sound like he's going to be back anytime soon. I think part of the malaise here, even as I'm looking at the schedule, is the schedule doesn't scare you. The division doesn't scare you. They know they can go on the road and run the table, so maybe they don't feel as motivated. But, you know, again, this is we're testing ourselves against ourselves this next half of the season.
It's a good thing. It's a good problem to have. I mean, this is the problem that world championship teams have. And we watched from afar for years and years and years and years as teams tried to tackle these very issues. Complacency, right? I don't think Tom Brady's complacent, but I do think it's human nature for some guys to kind of be complacent after reaching the summit. So I would just say that I always sat back and with great envy would listen to the stories and read the articles about the team trying to overcome, the sense of accomplishment and complacency. Okay, there are worse things in the world. Having to overcome a sorry ass roster is what the Bucs have had to do for the better part of their existence. And now it's just a matter of getting the elite talent to play at an elite level more consistently. That's a good effing problem to have.
Yeah, a couple of things I'll say about that briefly before we wrap is, you know, the Joe Bolts fan podcast and its existence here on joebucksfan.com, the first few years of doing that, it was all about the culture of complacency. That Tampa Bay Lightning team could score 5 a night. And if you play them tough defensively, they're like, we'll get you tomorrow. If you're really going to try that hard, whatever, no big deal. And then it bit them in the ass against Columbus in the first round to the point where, like, okay, we've got to change some things. Credit to them for changing and winning back-to-back cups. but that's how they were. They were soft. There was a culture of complacency there.
Yeah.
The Bucks already have one in the back pocket, which is good. And I just want to say, don't confuse complacency with their, you know, or locker room with me as a fan. I love watching ass beatings.
I
love watching teams that play weak. Like that Bears game, I loved it. I watched every play of that game. I don't give a damn if it's like a roller skate, or no, you call it a rocking chair game. If it's a rocking chair game in the second quarter, I don't care. It's been
those are enjoyable.
Been forever since we've been there. So I always enjoy that.
I watched the Bears game and kept muttering to myself, as a diehard Bucks fan, boy, the Bears really should fire Nagy. That's what I kept saying as I was watching that, because poor Justin Fields was just sitting back there taking ass beating after ass beating. I'm like, what are you doing, sir? This is not what you do. And then I went, oh, yeah, well, it's not my concern.
Yeah, you're assessing other rosters because you know you're so good. You're like, oh, they got problems there.
Yeah, they got issues there. Nagy may not be the answer in Chicago. You're this is
the
problematic.
Judgmental member of the HOA. You know, that's who you are. You're the judgmental member of the HOA. Just like looking around the neighborhood like they don't have it together.
We're going to have to talk to Philip next week about his hedges. Those are out of control. Our thanks to Bill Curry Ford, as always, for sponsoring the Scuttlebucks. Our thanks to our friends at Joe Bucks Fan as well, joebucksfan.com. Go read the latest there. But Bill Curry Ford, BillCurryFord.com. Go get you a new truck. It's a good time of year to get you a new truck, right? Feeling good about it? Let's go. Let's go. They're beautiful trucks. Go check them out, BillCurryFord.com. As for Sean Sullivan, he'll chat up some bucks with you, sell you a truck, get you in on a good deal, and you'll feel better about things. Who doesn't feel better when they drive home with a new truck? Yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah, you noticed that pewter's back in vogue for a lot of cars. I'm seeing that color on the road more, and we don't live in Tampa. Like, in general, that's the style. So if he says, what do you want your new F-150 to look like? The Buccaneers helmet. That's
what I want. Gene Dekaroff walks in and says exactly those words. For Tom Lang, I'm Jeff Cameron. Thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy the bye week, and go Bucks. We'll talk to you again on Monday, I think it is. So look forward to it. Like, subscribe, whatever you got to do. Make sure you get this thing populated in your podcast forum, wherever that is. All right? Be good, everybody. Enjoy the football.